这个功能。
来。
Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Hurd. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you learn more about the organization, its members, the who, what, where, when, and why, their codes of conduct, how to become a member, a donor, learn about their sports program with the packages included, how to get involved with the program. And for all my new listeners and all of my returning listeners, if you hover your mouse over the More tab, you see a drop-down box. If you hover your mouse over the Learning Center, you see another drop-down box, a whole bunch of resources that you and your family and friends can use to enhance yourself. So once again, it's www.pactsinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Enigma September, and listen to the wonderful shows that we got on our network as we continue to do what we do. And remember, we are growing, and we're available on Stitcher, Radio Public, iTunes, Google Play, and of course our website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word.
Really going down. Hey, but don't be afraid to go to Radio Public or Stitcher to check out our podcast as well. So we appreciate all the support that y'all give us. You heard me?
Word.
Man, what's been going down with you, Pat?
Word. Not much.
Words.
I've been chilling like a villain named Krillin on penicillin, you feel me?
Chilling like a villain named Krillin on penicillin.
You feel me?
How you do that, Willie?
With the grace of Willie.
With the grace of Willie, you do that. All right. I mean, I feel you. I think I feel you. I am the pastor in the Church of Willie. Ain't no first. It's the pastor. I don't die. They becoming an apostle in the Church of Willie. I'm immortal now.
Well, see, man, you already know what it do when it go down to the Willy Willy.
Say, man, you join my church. All the ladies who sit on the first two rows, them all, you my woman. All y'all one, you my woman. My women. You know it. But, man, it's been a minute since, it's been a little minute since we had a social discussion, though. Or do it just feel like that?
It's been a while. We didn't have some interviews. You know, we had to, unless you want to count the mental health awareness shows as social.
Well, yeah, we can, but
really social discussions.
Yeah, it's a discussion, but it's not like the typical social discussion that we would spend talking about things that have happened lately in the world, even though it is, but it ain't. Because it was more so aimed at making sure we help raise awareness and talk about resources for mental health.
So what we got today?
So we back for all the homies who don't know how to act. You hear me?
VIPs get in the back.
Yeah, hear me. Hey, bust that freestyle you always want to bust.
Flow so sick, like collard greens on tuna fish. Oh, same pussy bitch. Got bars for days. Hoes hate it, ladies. Eating potatoes, ladies. You heard what I say? Deal.
Y'all want y'all to strap yourselves up because it's going down. So, talking about the environment, but we're also talking about other things that have happened that are significant. So, our first topic will be about the forest fires in the Amazon and why it's important for that not to happen. Also, mention the deforestation that is happening in the rainforest because from my understanding, under this current administration, a large portion of deforestation has happened under this administration for Brazil, for the government. So we'll talk about that, because the rainforest is important. Just imagine the rainforest being one of your lungs. And if you lose one of your lungs, it's going to make it harder for your ass to breathe, man. So just think about it like that. We also want to talk about the shooting in Texas that happened, like, what, it was last week? It was in Odessa, Texas. So we want to talk about that. Of course, another mass shooting. Another one. And, you know, most likely it was a white dude, right?
Another one.
So, and then we're going to talk about the death and legacy of Robert Mugabe, the longtime leader of Zimbabwe. And we want to talk about it in that way because one thing that I learned this in middle school, well, no, I learned this in high school. Because it kind of clicked, I was in the social studies class in high school, and we were talking about different figures throughout history, and I noticed that, well, damn, it seems like whoever the United States deems as a dictator and a bad person, you might want to study them because they might be doing some good stuff. So we're going to talk about Mugabe. Now, that's not to say that bad didn't happen, but we are going to break it down. And then the last thing we're going to talk about is Hurricane Dorian and its effects and devastation on the Bahamas. And speaking of that, and I know we're going to get into it when we get into this part, but off the top of your head right now, Pat, do you know of any, and I know there are a lot about there, but know of any charities or relief efforts that are around that you've heard of, or you know anybody a part of those that are collecting items and money for people in the Bahamas?
Not besides the standard big ones, Red Cross and a couple other places, but I don't know of any. You know, I like to try to find the smaller ones that are making a direct impact with less bureaucracy. So, no, I haven't found any of the smaller ones that I would like to deal with.
Okay. But, we're going to get more into that once we get into that topic. So, but yeah, man, let's go ahead and kick this thing off, man, and jump into it about the Amazon. So let's start here. Let's start before we get into the story. Let's start with the importance of the Amazon. And as our resident nerd, Pat, explain to the folk, and of course you know I'm gonna jump on it too, but explain to the folk why the Amazon is important. I use my lung analogy, but break it down to the folk why the Amazon rainforest itself is important to the planet.
Well, your lung analogy is actually a pretty good analogy because of what the rainforest actually does. Not only is it home to a tremendous amount of biodiversity and to a tremendous amount of actual more than a few native humans, indigenous people that live in the rainforest who for years have been on the first line of defense defending their homes, literally.
Right.
The rainforest also acts as a buffer zone for climate change. The rainforests absorb a large amount of CO2 from the air. And they obviously, it's responsible for producing huge amounts of oxygen as well. But in our current state of climate change with what we have going on right now, the last thing we need is for the buffer zones that we have that are absorbing CO2 and other greenhouse gases. We don't need those things vanishing. And we certainly don't need them vanishing in a way that's going to produce more greenhouse gases. And it really becomes a layer problem on that end because the Amazon rainforest has actually absorbed so much CO2 that it has started to emit CO2 from the actual rainforest, meaning that it has reached its capacity or its limit for absorbing CO2. And now CO2 that has been absorbed is starting to leak out. And there are a lot of questions and speculations about when this started and how long it's going to last. But one thing that is 100% positive is that destroying the rainforest is not going to
happen. It's not going to happen.
The problem.
It's not going to happen. Right.
So, but in a nutshell, you know, to keep it simple, right, the rainforests absorb a tremendous amount of greenhouse gases from the atmosphere, and they give us this buffer zone of where we can do some of the things that we want to do that might not be 100% helpful for the planet or healthy to the planet, but there are these buffer tools in place that can absorb some of that negativity. The Amazon rainforest is one of the largest buffer zones we have left on the planet.
Yeah, and we need the rainforest to be intact, especially with the amount of global warming increasing and a lot of deforestation around the globe, and just a lot of things that are happening negatively to the planet. We keep telling y'all, look, man, the planet gonna cleanse itself. The planet gonna get rid of us before it allows us to get rid of it. We keep telling you all. So we have to take this stuff serious. We have to stop playing around and acting like, oh, because it's not in our backyard, that it doesn't directly affect us. And we should also have empathy for the people, like the indigenous tribes and people who inhabit the rainforest, who are basically losing their homes. Imagine you waking up and finding out that your home that you live in is either being destroyed or on the verge of being destroyed because of massive fires or all these other different things that are happening around in the area, but specifically not for this conversation, the deforestation and the fires. Because these fires have been going on for at least a month.
Right.
And so let me read this. It says, this is from CNET.com. It's saying, the Amazon rainforest has been on fire for the past month, and Brazil has declared a state of emergency in the region. The fires are destroying the homes of indigenous tribes and threatening millions of animal species. One tribal chief described the halting response of Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro regarding the fires, along with his support for deforestation as a form of genocide. The number of fires in Brazil this year is the highest on record since 2013, and is up by 85% from last year alone. CNN reported that so far this year, more than 80,000 fires in the country have been detected by Brazil's Space Research Center. I didn't know that. So we're paying attention to this one particular fire because it's a massive fire. But what's that, 80,000 fires in the total country of Brazil, not necessarily just in the Amazon, but 80,000 fires, that's a lot. In a year? Shit. But this is, like I said, this is something that we can't just look at, oh man, that's bad. Like, we really have to look at this and we need to be as willing to become mobile with this as we are with Hurricane Dorian and other things like that, other natural disasters that happen. And those of us who have the means to help, we should be all hands on deck to help, because that's just what we need to do to make sure that we help the people out, but also make sure these areas like the Amazon, in 30 years, that shit still need to be around. If the Amazon ain't around in 30 years, things get worse, global warming get worse, like weather get worse, all those things get worse. And just because your ass is in America or wherever you are around the globe and you feel comfortable in your space doesn't mean you're going to remain comfortable in your space if we lose this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I mean, the fires are so bad, and there are so many of them that, you know, the smoke is visible from space. And there's actually articles out there that show pictures of the smoke in the upper atmosphere taken from the space station. to put it bluntly, it's bad. You know, like you said, and it's one of those things where the rainforest is tremendously important towards regulating climate all over the globe. And when you lose a rainforest, you lose not only a tremendous amount of biodiversity and a tremendous amount of species, animal species that reside within the rainforest, not only do you lose that buffer zone, but you also reshape the balance of the entire planet in terms of weather. And the type of weather, the type of weather or climate cycles that fall into place to restore some semblance of stability might not be one that's conducive to
right.
So if you don't know the issue, and it's made worse by the fact that climate change deniers are finding themselves in positions of power all over the globe right now. The president of Brazil is a climate change denier. He doesn't believe it's real. He believes that the rainforest should be cut down, made smaller, so that he can use the land for agriculture, building homes, building cities, developing industry. And he's frequently pushed back, saying other countries are able to do what they want with their land. Why can't we Brazilians do what we want to do with our land? And he's not talking about all of the Brazilians. He's talking about the government which he leads.
Right, right. Well, bitch, I mean, because it don't just affect you, or you fuck boy. Like, and also, like, you can't just displace people who've been living here before your bitch ass got in the office. Like, it's not just about you and your soft ass government, man. It's about the people who are being disenfranchised in Brazil, and also the people around the world who will be affected by this. Because this article that I got in front of me is saying that they basically believe that humans started most of the fires. They were saying the president, Bolsonaro, was suggesting, he had first suggested that the fires were started by non-governmental organizations in retaliation to funding cuts. Then he later came back with trying to say he ain't never say that before. So, you know, he's being a bitch, but it's more than just, it's not like it's just a little plot of land in his backyard. We're talking about a whole ecosystem that is literally connected to how most of the world, well, how the world breathes, because this is one of the largest producers of oxygen on the planet. And not just, like I said, not just planet-wise, but in Brazil, like, people are being displaced. And I know they think they're better than those people. So it's that that superior-inferior mindset from the government, but nah, bruh. Nah, you can't just do what you want to do with that plot of land right there. Because first of all, it ain't yours.
Well, but the problem we're having, and this is where we get back into the discussions of politics is real, and it has real life implications. Because this dude, there was a $20 million aid package put together by the G7 to give to Brazil to help them put out the forest. Not to mention the fact that several countries over the decades have gotten together and put together aid packages for Brazil just to maintain the rainforest. So there is global interest in helping the Brazilian economy and in doing what's right in terms of making sure that all of humanity pays the cost that will go along with maintaining the rainforest. So it's not like Brazil has to go at this whole, let's take care of the Amazon by ourselves. The Amazon crosses into several countries, Brazil being the largest, or having the bulk of it in Brazil. But there are a number of countries that have offered money and resources to help this. But recently, this guy has refused the $20 million aid package that was just recently offered to help them to help put the fires out, because Emmanuel Macron basically did. Emmanuel Macron is the president of France, but
right.
He basically called the dude out for comments that he had made about the indigenous population of Brazil. One of the things he said was, they don't speak our language, but they have managed to get 14% of our national territory. That's a direct quote.
He said they were there before you, bitch.
This is to empower us.
Like so, but that's an ignorant as white supremacist type statement to make. Because it's like, I don't have to speak your language, first of all, for me to be a citizen or me to be recognized as a human being or a petitioner of this land. But those people in the Amazon have literally been there for thousands of years before your funky ass family decided to come over, wherever the hell his funky ass family come from. But for that to be a reason, oh, they don't speak my language. What? Like what you just got through? What you smoking, Molly?
He's smoking something.
That's crazy.
But he's been pushing this agenda of opening up indigenous lands for Brazilian development, as if those people aren't the real live owners and natives of that land. Because you know a lot of times these white people forget. And yes, I know he's Brazilian. But he's still a colonizer. He's a white guy that came
right.
over into that area and took that shit over. But
right.
a lot of the times they forget that these motherfuckers, this is their land. This is they. So I can recall not too long ago, because I was debating doing the Lessons from the Screen show on it. This is maybe a year or two ago, where they were actually having the indigenous people. The indigenous people were actually actively involved in preventing deforestation and all these other things from happening in the rainforest, to the tune of standing in front of trucks, tractors, and things like that,
right.
preventing them from moving forward, to breaking a lot of the machinery. Like, these people have been actively fighting to preserve their homes in the rainforest for years and years and years.
Right.
And now, basically, this guy is like, you know what, fuck it. We ain't going to cut it down, because that gives them an opportunity to break the machinery and get in the way. We just set this shit on fire. And
right.
And for him to even be allowed to do that, like, if we're serious about protecting the rainforest, that's where we need to step in. And, you know, something like this should be considered a crime. He should be brought to charges for this.
He should be. He should be in prison right now, getting ready to get 100 years. Because it's like, if the indigenous people did that to his home, they would be jailed.
Right.
But it go back to that inferior, superior ideologies. Well, you guys are just those people that's in the woods. Y'all uncivilized anyway. So y'all opinion and y'all lifestyle and your lives don't even count. So we just going to go ahead and do what we want to do with your land, even though, you know, y'all been living here forever. So that's crazy.
Another point I mentioned here is the way everything is connected. Because the dispute right now between China and America, the trade dispute, it's something that is also impacting this Amazon situation, because China has vowed to not import any U.S. goods. And China does import a significant amount of U.S. agricultural products, namely soybeans and other types of farm-produced products. So one of the things we're having here is, a matter of fact, China imported 22%. There was a 22% decrease in American imports in China last month, compared to a 16% decrease in Chinese imports to America. But the Chinese are serious. They don't want to buy shit from America no more. And what that does is that opens up the opportunity for other companies, other nations to step in and fill that agricultural void. So when you have a country like Brazil with a tremendous amount of land, and the president who basically doesn't give a fuck about what's already on the motherfucking land, you're going to have somebody that sees an opportunity to make a lot of money by filling in that agricultural void. I'm willing to bet that Brazil has been having a lot of internal discussions amongst government officials about how much soybean they can produce and how many other agricultural goods that they can produce and ship to China in America's place. I'm willing to bet that's a driving factor. I've heard people already mention that he wants to use the land for agricultural development, but right now the two largest economies are beefing. America number one, China is number two, and the Chinese economy is growing.
It's just crazy. Like, all right, we're gonna use this for agricultural development. I mean, like, in a sense, that's already going on. It's just not stuff that you're benefiting from.
Right.
Be direct. We want to benefit from development of this land and fuck over everybody else. That's really what we want to do. That's basically. Because you just need to be a man and say it.
It is already, technically, it is already developed. I mean, it's a motherfucking rainforest.
Right.
And it's providing a lot of tangible goods. And if you need cash from it, open up more tourist locations. You know, like, there are other ways you can monetize the rainforest, especially in this era of hyperclimate sensitivity, where people are definitely concerned about global climate change. That you can't tell me that there isn't a way that you can leverage your country being a predominant holder of one of the last great rainforests on the planet. You can't leverage that financially? Well, now I think you're stupid.
Screed. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to, is greed. This particular administration is doing whatever they can to make as much money off the land and fuck the people over. That's what it comes down to. And they don't really care how it negatively impacts. And that's what I wonder about all these colonizers around the world, is, like, you all are so greedy that you are willing to destroy yourselves to get rich. So how can you enjoy money if you destroy yourself in the earth? But these motherfuckers think they're going to go to space, though, right?
Well, they got to find, I mean, you know, it really is like a virus. You know, once you consume all of the natural resources on the planet, you really do got to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
If you're not going to change to find a sort of rhythm or a harmony to exist in your ecosystem without ripping it to shreds, you just got to move to another ecosystem. And colonizers, that's kind of what they do. They don't find ways to exist. They consume, they consume, they consume, they consume. I hate to say it, but you know, like the whole deal with the Matrix, where he was talking about, the robot dude was talking about how humans are a virus. Like, that's a very accurate description of the way colonizers work.
Okay, right. White supremacists, anybody who's about oppression, depression, suppression, and all those things, they are the viruses of this earth. And the ones who sit back, watch them do it, and don't do nothing, they're the viruses as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, and we're going to repeat this throughout the show, the thing is, like we were talking about yesterday, the earth, just like our body, has this immune system that gets rid of the viruses. And it doesn't distinguish between good and bad. So, some good people going to have to perish once the earth starts really kicking up in the game, cleansing itself of these viruses. So we just got to do what we need to do, man. You might get swept up, you might not, but at least go down fighting. But you can't just sit back and be like, well, it don't affect me now. You know, it does affect you. It does affect you. So we have to, environmentally, especially Black America, we have to do better, and we have to do a better job of understanding how all of these other events do tie back to us. Because globally, African people will be still doing bad. And remember, outside of the continent of Africa, Brazil holds the second largest number of Black people or African people in the world. So think about that as well. So it's still affecting us. In our show notes, we'll do our best to have information about relief efforts for both Amazon and Dorian in our show notes and things like that. But before we get off today, while we're talking, we're going to be Googling and see what other relief efforts and things that we can find. So, but we did want to make sure that we give our piece on what's going on in the Amazon and wrap it into the context of how it really does affect us globally, whether you're black or not. But just understand also how it does affect black people in Brazil and around the world. So just because it ain't happening to you in your backyard don't mean it don't affect you. All right? So let's move on, man. Let's talk about this Odessa, Texas shooting, man. Another mass shooting didn't happen up in this this great country. Is this how we make America great again, Pat?
I guess. I mean, these white boys and what this white boy was on some typical white boy shit. You know, he got fired from his job, and you know they. A lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them do that type of shit when they lose their jobs.
Yeah. I don't. Well, we do get it because it's like what we call it, entitlement. Yeah, entitlement is the word I was looking for. That entitlement is, you can't do this to me. I'm me. Nah, bitch, you can't do that shit to you. That's why it happened, but. This is one of the many shootings that have happened in America in 2019. So it's this is USA Today article I'm reading. So it says, at least 7 people are dead and 22 others injured after a mass shooting rampage left 2 Texas cities in chaos. At least one person is in life-threatening condition. The gunman whom the Odessa Police Department identified as Aaron Ator, who's 36 years old, was also killed in a shootout. The shooting occurred between Odessa and Midland after a routine traffic stop turned violent at 3 p.m. local time Saturday. The gunman, who was only identified in the news conference as a white male in his mid-30s and driving a gold-colored car, began firing at officers and sped away. Sheriff Michael Gerke of Odessa Police Department described it as a different type of active shooter, given the gunman was firing along the highway. Police said the gunman grabbed a rifle and fired several shots at 2 Texas Department of Public Safety officers, wounding one during the traffic stop on Interstate 20. The shooter then fled westbound on the interstate toward Odessa, continuing his violence along the way and firing at other motorists and passersby. At one point, police say the suspect stole a mail truck. He also shot an officer from the Odessa Police Department and one from the Midland Police Department. The rampage ended in a Synergy movie theater in Odessa as officers cornered the assailant and fatally shot him. And so there's cell phone video that shows what's going on in the video and that. So, yeah, so I want to go down. Who's the gunman? So Gerke did not name the shooter in the news conference Saturday, so as not to give him any notoriety for what he did. Now that's bullshit. Because if dude was black, they would have blasted everything about his life on camera. Now that's that bullshit. Because you don't want to give him no notoriety. So any other time, you don't have a problem giving nobody notoriety because he was white. No, still white privilege still kick you in, no matter how much of a terrorist you were. So Seth Aaron Ator, a 36-year-old white dude of Odessa. In this article, they're saying that they don't know his motive, but you were saying that the motive was he got fired from his job.
Well, I don't know that that's the motive, but, you know, one of the things I was reading was saying that, and I believe it was a USA Today piece, was saying that he had got fired from his job. Or maybe it was a CNN piece that was saying that he got fired from his job hours before he started killing people. So, you know, I don't know that that was his motive. That's just me putting two and two together with, you know, like, I know white people might not know this about white people, but in the black community, you know, we know that when white people lose their job or their girlfriends or, you know, girls,
you get away from
kids, do something crazy or the stock market crash, white dudes lose their fucking minds in those moments.
They kill everybody and themselves.
Right. So when I read that, you know, he had lost his job hours before he started killing people, I was like, okay, well, this is a white dude doing white people shit.
But, and it's crazy because, you know, we keep coming back to when is white America going to really do something about their white male terrorist problem? Because it's everybody shouldn't have to suffer because a white dude had a bad day or had a bad moment or things didn't go right in this white dude's life. Because it seemed like white boys between the age of 18 and like 50, the most dangerous motherfuckers in the world.
Cause they are.
They don't know what's gonna go on with these boys.
They are.
Like that's crazy. Like, so once again, another shooting. And I saw a video when they were talking to members of the government about terrorists, homegrown terrorists and foreign terrorism. And the white men still refuse to admit that domestic terrorism is a bigger issue in America than foreign terrorism. They're still trying to say Islamic terrorism or other types of terrorism that may come from other countries is a bigger issue here in America than these homegrown white supremacist terrorists. And that's just like, that's bull. Like, show the information to suggest that white homegrown male terrorism isn't the biggest threat to American safety. Like, prove that it's not. It's always been the biggest threat to American safety. Stop pacifying these white boys.
Yeah, but the deal with that is they don't consider shit like what just happened an act of terrorism. And it is.
And that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. They don't consider it what it is. They consider it a cry for help, a disturbed individual doing disturbed things. They consider it everything but what it is, an act of terrorism. And so when you look at these shootings as what they are, you got to include these little motherfuckers going around shooting up schools too. They on that
list. Yeah, they terrorists. Right, they are terrorists.
You start seeing, like, yo, why the fuck are you clutching your purse when a black dude walk by when the white dude that just walked by is the one that's likely to shoot you in the forehead?
Right. I mean, I understand that it's them protecting their own, making sure that they don't put the narrative out about these white boys being terrorists the way they are. It's white America protecting white America. But it's like, I mean, for you to say that it's terrorism, it's only terrorism when it's foreign, is bullshit. How is it only terrorism when it's foreign? Like that, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, it's smart, but it's crazy for the rest of us. And then, like, for the people who are not white, who buy into it, like, you see it, you really see it, but for those who buy into it, I be looking at them like, what the hell is wrong with you? I mean, America has a white boy terrorist problem. That is, it does not want to admit, but let's just be real, that white boy terrorist problem that we have, we've always had, and that's what made America what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they keep trying to downplay it, because if you acknowledge America's white boy terrorist problem, then we got to dig it up and look at the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So. But now, you know, but a lot of them are, like you said, they're not only are they complicit in reframing the narrative and shaping everything, and protecting themselves, but they're complicit in the actual encouragement of the activity itself. And even the media organizations, you know, you look at the type of fame that a motherfucker has always been able to get for losing their mind and killing everybody.
Right.
You look at I mean, it's a whole other show. I'm trying to be short and brief with it, but it's a lot to cover when you really start breaking down why all of these things are happening, why they continue to happen, why they're going to continue to happen, and why our government seems to be unwilling to do anything to stop it. It's not like we're unable. They're flat out unwilling to do anything.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, they are not going to acknowledge it. They refuse to acknowledge. They will not acknowledge the fact that it's a big issue right in your face. Your biggest terrorist issue, your biggest problems come from your homegrown terrorists. But once again, that's what made, I guess that's one of the parts of what they were talking about when they was saying, let's make America great again, huh? Let's make sure the homegrown terrorism was at an all time high. The show do it. The white boys decide they're gonna fight back, and they're gonna fight back hard, even if it means destroying their own, huh?
Yeah.
But they willing to do
that. It seems like they're really on some "if you're not with me, you against me" shit. So for a lot of these people, race comes into it in terms of I'm a white supremacist, but it's also like, you know, I'm a white supremacist. If you're not a white supremacist with me, then you're expendable.
Right. Right. And it's like you can't love America. You're unpatriotic. All these things because you don't want to push the ideas of white supremacy. So we got to kill you too. It's like, for real. So, I mean, for the rest of us, man, look. Stop pussyfooting around, man. Stop sitting around waiting on the good to come out of people. You better judge people by their actions, not their words. Y'all keep wanting to sit down and have a conversation with people at the table. Alright. While y'all doing that, people dying. If I have to have a conversation with you for you to treat me like a fucking human being, then anything else that come after the conversation ain't genuine anyway.
Right.
What do we need to, what do we really need to talk about for you to treat me like a human being? What do I need to, what should I be saying to somebody? Come on, man, fuck out of here with all that stuff. Now y'all gotta be careful about what you are, what kind of ideologies and things that you all are repeating because it sounds good and it keeps saying it over and over and over. We need to have a seat at the table. We need to have conversations. Whatever.
Yeah, you know how I feel about the whole seat at the table argument. You know, logically, I get it. I get what you're trying to say, but historically, you need to understand that that argument holds no merit.
I don't get it. I don't get what they're trying to say. I don't get why we need a seat at the table.
I think logically I get it from the standpoint of if I have a seat at the table, then I can dictate at least my perspective on the things that are happening at the table that are going to influence everybody. So essentially, if I have a voice, I can use my voice to make myself known, and I can use my voice to influence what happens in a way that's favorable to me. But the problem is, we all know that one seat at the table ain't enough. We also know that getting the seat at the table hasn't really done much good for people.
Well, that's where I come from a historical perspective, because it's not like we haven't had seats at the table. So from a historical perspective, especially for Black America, how has this seat at the table actually benefited us? Because we like more fucked up now than we've ever been. So how has having these seats at the table benefited us really in real life outside of the rhetoric? How has it really helped Black America?
But you know, that's a whole, because that's another hour-long show we can have just on that seat at the table philosophy, deconstructing it and pointing out the different ways that it's been proven that it doesn't work, but also pointing out that there are some merits to wanting to be at the table where decisions are made. But there's a lot of other things that come that have to come into play first before you having a seat at the table actually carries any real impact on your community. One of the biggest things is you have to be at that table with some sort of power behind you.
Right.
If you don't have no power behind you when you're just sitting down at the table, then
you ain't talking about that.
That goes back to what you were saying earlier about now all of a sudden you're at the table, but you got to prove that you belong at the table. You got to prove that you're human. And why would you want to sit at a table with a bunch of motherfuckers that don't think that you're human, they don't think that you should be at the table, and they're not going to be willing to share the resources on the table with you? That's a waste of energy to try to be at that table.
We should be controlling our own.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to white supremacist meetings trying to talk to members of the KKK. And then on a deeper level, one of the problems with that is what ends up happening is your individualized conversation with somebody does not change their view of the group that you're a part of. It changes their view of you. So you'll become the special nigga, the different nigga. But the rest of them niggas is still niggas.
Right.
And that's what I've been trying to tell people for a while. You can't change somebody's view of an entire culture by introducing them to one member of that culture. That's not how shit works.
Right. Right. But I mean, you know, it just kills me with that when people, well, we need to have a seat at the table. Why is their table so damn important to us? Why do we put more energy into being a part of somebody else's table instead of taking over our own? And also, okay, so we got one person at the table. What type of support does this person have at the table to actually get things pushed that's going to benefit us as a whole? Like, what type of inside or outside pressure can you put on the table to make the table take anything this person says serious? Yeah, because we ain't organized. So you got a lone ranger out there by themselves trying to talk for the group. Like, Jay-Z supposedly have a seat at the table for us. You see how that turned out? You fuck around and funding damn organizations that's cutting away black dudes' hair and culture, and stripping away everything that is for them to be black, and telling them this is the type of black person you need to be if you're gonna be successful. This I forgot the name of the group, but it's out of Chicago. Like, come on, man. Be careful about these seats at the table. And also, when we get these people at these seats at these tables, they usually conform to the culture of the table. So, okay.
That's one of the things we need to really pay attention to, is the fact that there's a cost to be at any table. And we so busy trying to get to the table that we're not paying attention to the cost associated with being at the table. And in a lot of cases, the cost is continuity of culture and conforming. You have to become like us to sit at our table.
Right.
I don't give a damn how you think you're going to change shit when you get here. If you want to stay here, you got to rock how we rock. And that's the rules of every table. You can't even go to a table where they playing spades and think that you're going to play a different brand of spades than the brand of spades that's being played at that table. Nah, bruh. We don't play deuces here. You know, we play jokers.
Well, because, you know, I mean, it's like we don't need you at this table.
Right.
We don't need you at the table.
And if you ain't gonna conform to the way we rock, it's a whole bunch of other motherfuckers willing to rock like we rock that'll take that seat at the table. You get your ass up and go somewhere.
Right. So, yeah, it's just that. But all in all, it's just to say, well, we did kind of take a left, but still, to kind of bring it back, white domestic terrorism in America is real. War has been declared on black people a long time ago. Long time ago. White people been killing black people en masse a long time ago, and white people have been killing themselves en masse since before America. So Don't get this shit twisted. I'm not in saying that. I'm not saying all white people are terrorists. I'm not saying all white people support white supremacy. But I'm going back to Muhammad Ali's analogy. If there are 10,000 snakes coming at my door, and only 1,000 of those 10,000 snakes are non-poisonous, I'm not going to let all 10,000 snakes in my house to try to sift through them to just get to that 1,000 who I know are not poisonous. I'm leaving all the snakes outside. All of them. And that's not saying we can't use allies, but it's saying we use allies in a strategic way. But what goes on in the house stays on in the house. And while we're in this house, we're building our own tables. And that's one thing that can help keep us safe from this white domestic terrorism. We have to start doing for self and protecting ourselves and stop being so carefree and stop being so isolated in white communities and white areas and just taking ourselves away from our stronghold and what could protect us from white supremacists. We got to do better. We got to do better. Stop trying to be a part of everybody else's thing and leaving ourselves vulnerable. Because white domestic terrorism is real and we're seeing it over. And we've been seeing it. But now we're starting to believe it. Hundreds of years later. I don't understand that, but now we're starting to see it. So. But yeah, let's move on. We kind of did take a left for Albuquerque on that, but you know, it all flowed together.
Necessary. It's been so many shootings, and they all about white dudes losing their fucking minds. So, you know,
maybe all right. They like it. The listeners like. I hope y'all like it. If y'all don't like it, I don't know what to tell you, but yeah. All right. So, longtime president of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, has died, and The Atlantic, like I asked earlier, The Atlantic is a white publication, correct?
Yes, I believe.
And it has black people that write for it, right?
Not a black Atlantic, but the Atlantic itself is white owned, I believe.
Okay, because the headline is saying Robert Mugabe died too late. His rule began brutally and ended in pathetic squalor. And this is by look like some Asian dude named Graham Wood or whatever. It's the staff writer for The Atlantic. So, whatever this boy is. But before we get into like the article and things, like what are your thoughts about Robert Mugabe's presidential reign in Zimbabwe?
I mean, it is for me very much a mixed legacy, but. You know, kind of like we talked about it during the show, it's kind of interesting. Motherfuckers who have never run a country or held any sort of seat of power are always kind of passing judgment on people who have. That's not to say that there isn't a level of scrutiny that needs to be given to anybody in a leadership position. But that is to say that people oftentimes make sweeping generalizations without considering everything that's going on and without considering all of the context. And not even to say that some of the things that Mugabe did weren't bad. You know, I don't think the farm seizures of white people was bad. That's really when
That's when
the opinion of Robert Mugabe really began to deteriorate globally was when he was basically okay. He basically okayed the taking of land from white farmers without compensation. And then he was so bold as to say the British government should pay y'all for us taking these farms. Not us. Y'all took them from us. We taking them back. And I agree with that. And that's one of the issues we have all over Africa. White people thinking that these white people need compensation because they've owned the, I don't give a fuck how long you've owned the land.
You passed down stolen items, bitches.
Right. You took it from somebody else. And the people that you took it from have had to live the subsequent 100 years or more in a position of poverty and lack. If they're not going to get compensation for the last 100 years of poverty and lack caused by your ancestors taking their shit, then you shouldn't get compensation for the last 100 years of you being able to benefit from the stolen goods. No, fuck that. Fuck that. So I agree with that, but that's when his reputation started to deteriorate. And that's when, on a lot of levels, he became very suspicious and very paranoid about European nations trying to oust him and influence his country and this, that, and the third. And that's when all of the smoke started, and that's when the controversy began. So my view of him is that he's a great freedom fighter, somebody that's necessary. The early part of his freedom fighting career, the first few years, the first decade or so, roughly, of his presidency, is filled with things that should be studied and emulated and praised. The last 20 years of his reign is where things get a little bit dicey. And that is a whole other show in and of itself, one that I've considered doing a Lessons from the Screen on. But on the whole, I feel like Robert Mugabe was a mixed figure. Was he this villain that everybody likes to try to portray him as? No, I don't think so. Do I think that at some point he maybe got a little bit caught up in his own hype of being the father, a founding father, and of thinking that he could do no wrong? Did he maybe lose sight of his goals a little bit? From the outside looking in, that's what it looks like. And I preface that by saying from the outside looking in.
Right.
That's what it looks like. But on the grand scheme of things, I think his life was a net positive for the people in the country that he ran. I think it was a net positive.
Yeah, because and I'm glad you said that from the outside looking in, because that's really how we are looking at his presidency over here in America, from the outside looking in. And my first question is, throughout his presidency, because you had ups and downs and all these things here. Hell, even over here in America, you have economic issues that come up with great presidents. I say that because I was looking at something yesterday when it was talking about how inflation and all those things affected the value of money and things like that in Zimbabwe and all those things under his presidency. But hell, that has happened in America under so-called great presidents. So what's the overall welfare of the people of Zimbabwe under his presidency? And if the overall welfare of Zimbabwe was good, was okay, then it'd be hard to say that he was a bad president or he was even a dictator. It'd be hard pressed to say that, because it's still white people coming from their white perspectives, or these other non-black people, or even some black people coming from their perspective, making it as if Mugabe is just a all-out terrorist. And I'm like, I can't believe that Robert Mugabe would be I don't see him, not me personally, I don't see him as a terrorist. I don't see him as a bad leader. I don't see him as those things. Now, I may not agree with everything that he's done, but I don't think we have enough real information to really look at Mugabe and say, he was just an all-out bad president. Now, like I said, you don't have to agree with everything he did, and I don't expect everybody to agree with everything he did, but he did do some things that helped Zimbabwe move forward. Some things happened when they moved backwards. I know his relationship with Mnangagwa after the coup attempt. Well, after the coup, matter of fact, after Mnangagwa and them got him out of office. You know, we talked about that in our shows then.
Right.
I encourage people to do your really research Mugabe. Like, really look at Mugabe. Really, really research him. And once again, remember, when white people say somebody is horrible, they may not be totally horrible. They just may not be. I mean, white America has a history of painting stories the way they want to paint and making heroes out of people who they want to make heroes out of. Now, once again, this is not going to excuse any actions that Mugabe had that were not for the people, but overall, what was his overall, you know, what was the overall quality of his presidency, I should say? And then we need to talk to the people of Zimbabwe. Don't just get it from these articles and think, what are the people of Zimbabwe saying about Mugabe?
But this is where, and that's where you get into the, because Mugabe was president for over 35 years, I believe.
Yeah, like about four decades.
And so you run into this area where he was a teacher. Then he was a freedom fighter that liberated his country from white colonization, which is huge. Then he instituted constitutional reforms. He instituted economic reforms. He instituted gender role reforms where, you know, women were gaining new standards and having new access to various different opportunities. He did all of these things. And then, you know, he also got down on the black pride situation and trying to restore the pride of his people. The whole land taking situation, I felt like that was significant, and that was a huge positive, and I wish more countries would do that to these white motherfuckers that's been sitting on land. And I say that with like that because it's true. But then, you know, you get into the second half of his presidency where from 2000 forward, where there were a lot of things going on, but one of the things that is you got to keep context on is after he started with the land taking of the land around about 2000, the British government, Tony Blair, really wanted to institute regime change in Zimbabwe. And so you had a lot of these Western nations taking steps to delegitimize his government and to get him out. And that's where it becomes really hard to parse what's real from what was artificially created. Because from 2000 forward, things just started getting bad. That was when you had all of the election things where people were getting imprisoned. People were getting people were being followed, people were being harassed, beaten up. In some cases, people were murdered. And that's where you run into the situation where Mugabe would say, or people affiliated or associated with Mugabe would say, we didn't do this. This is a ploy to delegitimize our government, blah, blah. You know, they would go down the spiel. And when you know that there is a plan for regime change in this nation, it becomes, well, how much of that is fact? And how much of that is not? How much of that is just an organization or a nation covering for itself? Then you go into other situations where there were bans and sanctions and all kinds of embargoes placed on Zimbabwe because of Mugabe. Well, at the same time, you're also going through an economic downturn where poverty is spreading. The age rate is rising. I think at one point, the life expectancy for men and women in Zimbabwe was like 35 years old, because the food, the people, the black people that took over the farms from the white people, they couldn't get fertilizer for various different reasons, so the farms remained barren. So a lot of the food that was being produced on that land was no longer being produced. Now people are starving. Now you got the U.S. and European nations coming in with aid packages. Those of us who have studied aid packages know that aid packages are not necessarily beneficial.
Right.
Because they come with a lot of strings attached to them. So now you have these aid packages coming in. You have the rising AIDS rates for various different reasons, AIDS, HIV. And all of this stuff is happening internally while access to resources and to free trade and commerce and all these other things are being restricted externally. So how much of that do you blame on Mugabe, and how much of that do you blame again on the European power structure that clearly dislikes him and he clearly dislikes them?
Right.
Is operating around that. So every single thing you look at with regards to that, you're looking at, okay, Mugabe made this decision. Not necessarily the best decision in the world, probably a really bad decision, but how much of that, how much of what I'm reading is colored by the fact that the powerful Western nations wanted this man gone? And there are other stories of brutality, of genocide, of situations where, I know there was a situation where he blatantly tried to remove 700,000, I'm not trying to remove, but there was a policy of forced Operation Drive Out the Rubbish, where it was a slum clearance program, and according to the UN, like 700,000 people were left homeless. And this was like a political fallout after a political election, a highly controversial political election, where he was almost defeated by the New Democratic Party in an election. And after he won the election, he basically took action against all of the people who were suspected to have voted for the opposition, denying them access to food, trying to drive them out of the nation altogether. And instances like that, you're like, okay, that just sounds like you tripping, Mugabe. But that's where you go back to what I mentioned earlier. This man has some of the most powerful nations in the history of the world trying to get him out. How much of what I'm reading is real? How much of it is not? And how much of that situation, how much of those 700,000 people were actually, you see what I'm saying? Like, it gets
My question with that is, what type of opposition were they, and what type of threat were they truly to Zimbabwe? Because I'm not saying what he did was right or wrong. The question, we have to ask specific questions, because what we do know about Africa is a lot of African leaders succumb to European pressure, to European bribes and European things. That's why, like Nigeria, for example, that's why Nigeria is still in the state that it's in. It's not in a good state, because the leaders are sellouts. And so when the leaders are sellouts, we can see how it directly impacts the people. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Zimbabwe economically is in the state that Nigeria is in. Am I right or am I wrong?
Zimbabwe is in pretty bad shape right now economically. It's not in the same state Nigeria is in. And I would have to do a little bit more digging, because I haven't looked into Nigeria in a while. I'm going to be totally transparent with that.
We know from the people who are from Nigeria, who speak out about Nigeria, that Nigeria is in a bad state. Now, I'm not saying that Zimbabwe is in a great state, but we do know that one of the reasons why Nigeria is in the place that it's in is corrupt sellout leaders who are pushing or doing the business of what the Americans have been doing, or European powers have been doing. So I would imagine when you are not getting the same resources as these other nations, that, of course, you're gonna struggle. There's going to be some struggling going on. But once again, these people that he would have persecuted, were they true sellouts? Were they people who were pushing foreign agendas, all these different things? Those questions have to be asked. You can't just be like, oh, he's a bad person. Well, why did this happen to these people? What did these people do? You know, I'm not victim blame. I'm not just saying, well, these people just had to do something wrong, but did they do something wrong? Were they a part of these outside regimes?
It's just seeking to understand the situation in its entirety. Because you got to understand, when you criticize Robert Mugabe, you are criticizing an area of Zimbabwean history. And that's not to say that he's above criticism. Because if he fucked up, you know, like, he need to wear the fact that he fucked up, even as he transitions. He still has to wear all of the fuck-ups that he had. But when I first started reading about the type of pressure that he was under, a lot of things that I originally thought about Mugabe, because I thought Robert Mugabe's a monster. Until I started reading about it, a lot of the pressures that he was facing, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, is he a monster or is there other things at play? And that's not saying he isn't a monster, but that is saying there's a lot of things at play. I mean, you look at the guy running the country right now, Emmerson Mnangagwa. We talked about him a year or two ago when this whole, the whole bloodless coup thing happened. And one of the very first things he did when he came, and keep in mind now, Emmerson Mnangagwa was at one point one of the most loyal.
Right. He was his homeboy.
Right. He's one of the reasons why Robert Mugabe remained in power for as long as he did. And all of a sudden, he is behind a bloodless coup that overthrows Robert Mugabe. And one of the very first things he does is walk back the land grabs.
Right. I'm talking about it was within 48 hours. And he was already live from the Giddy White folk back they land.
And so, and I believe one of the very next things he did was remove Grace Mugabe, Robert Mugabe's wife.
Right.
That was kind of the cause of the whole bloodless coup. Robert Mugabe was like, my wife gonna take over when I'm gone. And Emmerson Mnangagwa was like, nah, homeboy, we didn't have this scheduled for a long motherfucking time. We ain't even been a role like that. And the military was like, yeah, man, we with Mnangagwa right there. We ain't with Grace. I mean, she cool and all. But, you know, we with Mnangagwa. And so, you know, you begin to think that the agenda. They've had an agenda for a while to get rid of Robert Mugabe. They got rid of Robert Mugabe. And now, you know, Robert Mugabe is dead. But I think his legacy is one that is not clear cut. It's not one of those where it's easy to say he's a monster. Or it's easy to say he was a liberator. His legacy is a lot more complex than that. And I think the more you dig into it, the more you realize he's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, I would say he would be a little bit of both. He didn't. Everything he did wasn't good. Yeah, he did some bad. He did some bad, but I would imagine he did more good than bad. That's what I would imagine.
I'm understanding of what he did relatively well. I'm not a Mugabe expert, but I've read a lot about Robert Mugabe, and I feel like he was a net positive for his nation. But that's also where you get into, there is a difference between how he's viewed by younger Zimbabweans versus how he's viewed by older Zimbabweans. You know, a lot of the adults nowadays, the younger adults nowadays, they were born, you know, we're in 2019 right now.
So right.
You can have a kid born in 2000, they're 19 years old right now. Their view of Robert Mugabe,
it would be skewed.
You're right. It's filled with all of the turmoil and all of the issues that happened in the latter half of his life. They don't know about Freedom Fighter Mugabe. And if they do, they haven't experienced it. So it's a different world from what they've experienced. And so that's even when we begin talking to Native Zimbabweans, obviously they have more influence and more say because they lived there. But that time period that they grew up in and that they experienced him in is going to dramatically color how they view him. Just like it's dramatically going to cover how people view Emmerson Mnangagwa and how he moved
forward. Nah, that's real though. That is real. It's all about perception, and it's a whole game. That's why propaganda works the way it does, because it's a perception game. So if I can make this person be perceived as a bad person, then it will change the game. It will change the game a bit, and people won't see this person in the light that they would probably need to be seen. So therefore, it will. But you know how America is, man. These are our enemies, and these people are our enemies for a reason. So let's put that message out. But you always got to ask yourself, why are these people enemies to America? Because usually people become enemies to America when they're not doing what America wants them to do.
I mean, that's usually how it works.
Yeah, yeah. So, but no, those are our thoughts. Those are our thoughts about Robert Mugabe. We encourage you to do your own research on the brother. Like I said, we feel like he did some good and some bad, but I feel like he did more good than bad. And once again, when white people say they bad, they might be good. So with that being said, we're going to move on to our last topic. And past week, Hurricane Dorian ripped through, I know, Freeport, Bahamas. It set over the Bahamas for like 2.5 days, moving at like 1 to 2 miles an hour. And it totally destroyed areas of the Bahamas. And it was horrible flooding. Flooding was massive. The winds were massive. People are displaced. People have to literally start over. But there are a lot of relief efforts. From my understanding, Disney is donating $1 billion. Tyler Perry is donating money. The Carnival Cruise Lines is using their ships to house some of the people. But a coworker of mine was asking. We had this conversation the other day because we was like, we're not downgrading the relief efforts by like Disney and Carnival and all these things now. But if Carnival can send a ship after the storm leaves to house the people, couldn't they send the ship before the storm got there to house the people to kind of get them away so we could have less casualties? I mean, people are still going to lose their homes, their property. You can't say that. But couldn't they, because you could track hurricanes. It's not like a tornado. You could track hurricanes. So couldn't they have sent those ships before the storm hit the island to get as many people off as possible to lessen the casualties? I'm just saying, that's just a thought that went through my head. That couldn't that have happened before? But nevertheless, we do want to talk about what happened with Hurricane Dorian. And it is hurricane season as well. So we'll have more hurricanes coming. I'm in Florida, Pat is in Carolina, so we're both affected by this. But you know, we just thought it was interesting that about, you know, because we know things are more reactionary than proactive or preventative. But I just thought it was kind of interesting that we thought it was interesting that this amount of relief help is coming. But I do think. People are embarrassed about what happened with Puerto Rico last year, and especially the way Trump treated it, and is still treating it, and would be treating the Bahamas if regular citizens and private companies and stuff don't step up. The people in the Bahamas would just be fucked if you lived to the American government. But it overall, the hurricane to me, it's sad, man. I don't like to see these things happening to people. And it's sad, and it's kind of wild, and it's kind of scary that the hurricanes now are a lot more destructive than they used to be. So just like before we kind of get into some of the details, just overall, just off the top of your head, Pat, like what's some of your thoughts about this stuff, man?
I mean, it's kind of similar to how I felt when we talked about the hurricane that hit. That hit East Africa not too long ago. And even to your idea, I think it's a good idea, actually. It is a good question, but I do wonder, would people have left before the storm hit? And that's kind of where my brain is at with it. People that grow up in areas filled with storms like we have on the East Coast and Hurricane Lane and all that other stuff, we've kind of grown up with the storms. And so that creates this area or this sort of mindset where we always think the weatherman is overreacting because we've ridden out storms before.
Right.
But I think one of the things we got to understand now is that these storms are not those storms.
You know, yeah, like, these not storms of the past.
Right. Like, these storms are something different. These storms are not the storms that, you know, your your parents rolled out in the trailer or in the hood. This is a different monster. These storms are stronger, they're bigger, they're carrying more water, more wind, more energy. They're doing more damage. I mean, every time one of these storms lands, it's doing records amount of damage.
But also think about the severity of these storms and our lack of attention to what's going on in our environment, like to the lack of attention to, like, all, like what we talked about, because this could tie into what's going on in the Amazon and also other things that are happening. When you destroy nature, you want to upset nature, and like we say, a lot of these things are like hurricanes are part. Like the conversation we had is the hurricanes are part of nature's immune system. Nature's gonna cleanse itself. Whether you're a good person or not, nature's gonna cleanse itself. But also, it's just understanding that we have to take care of our environment. We have to take care, because not taking care of our environment increases the intensity of these storms. They do. Whether people want to believe it or not, they increase the intensity of these storms.
Well, you know, we also got to get these people got to, people really, and I know we like to try to simplify things, but some shit can't be simplified. Weather is complicated, but we need people to really understand what's happening. Because, you know, we've all laughed at the man talking about let's drop ice and get airplanes to blow wind, and we've all groaned at Donald Trump talking about let's drop a nuke in the middle of the hurricane. But let's be honest.
That's
people, a lot of people share those sentiments and those beliefs, and they think that those are good strategic ideas. And that boils down to just an absolute failure of education. And I'm not blaming the educators. I'm blaming the system. We've got to, we can't expect people to do better with the level of ignorance that's regularly being displayed. Like, and that's kind of where I am with climate change, with racism, with social issues, cultural issues, no matter what the issue is. You can't expect people to be on the necessary level of thinking to be able to truly understand the problem to a point of being able to think about solutions when you got motherfuckers that are ignorant to their own ignorance about ignorant shit. I mean, these people don't know shit about shit on shit. So that's kind of the problem we have. And these are elected officials. These are people with high-paying jobs. These are people in all kinds of positions of power and influence. And we're trying to get these people to grapple with some real complex situations under circumstances and mechanisms. And the foundation isn't there for them to grasp these concepts. We've just got to do better. We got to do more. We got to be more efficient and more logical and more thoughtful. And I think it all starts with education. I think fucking our system is failing our nation. And that's from the standpoint of it failing the students and it failing a lot of the teachers that are out there really trying to do a good job teaching.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one thing that I heard, I'm not saying this is true, so don't take this to the bank. Say Joe said this, Joe said that. But one thing that I heard was there was a lot of looting going on. But I don't know how true this is. But some people were saying specifically there was a group of Haitian people on the Bahamas islands in the areas where the hurricane hit that were robbing and killing some of the Bahamian people. I can't confirm that, but that's just something that I heard. And I made me think about that because as you're talking, I'm looking through this article. They're talking about how some residents had to resort to looting stores in order to survive during the storm to get resources and things that they needed. I don't have a problem with that, but if you're killing people and you're robbing people who are already messed up, if that's true, that's messed up. But it says the Bahamian government has announced that 45 people have been confirmed dead. But there could be more. Hundreds of people are still missing. And the government has brought in more body bags and coolers. The island is running out of food, water, and fuel, and that Even people whose houses survived the storm will soon have to leave. Many people do not have access to adequate food and water, and limited sanitation is operating on the island. The storm also left behind pools of water and remains of destroyed buildings, creating nurseries for mosquitoes. And like I say, it's not the total island chains of the Bahamas that was totally destroyed. It's not that. It's the part that was mostly in the path that the storm set over. So I learned that listening to the radio yesterday, because I thought that the total chain of islands were destroyed. That it's not the total chain, but it's crazy. But hold on, let me see. It says, let me read this. If they go to Nassau, they think they're going to be put in a detention center because a lot of them don't have papers. Bahamas apprehended or helped apprehend. Hey, oh, never mind. I thought it was. It's saying something about the Haitians being immigrants and things. And they taking shelter in some houses. I thought they were trying to confirm what I was saying earlier, but it's sad. I hate to see this. I hate to see this with people, because I'm somebody who knows what it's like to lose everything. In my lifetime, in my 35 years growing up, we've lost everything twice. And starting over is not fun. It does give you a new perspective on life. It should give you a different perspective on materialism and all those things there. It make you want to work harder, make sure you do what you need to do to secure your stuff. But starting over isn't fun. And I don't know what it's like to not only have to start over, but lose people. So I can't even begin to totally sympathize with the people in the Bahamas. But what we can do is we can become a part of the relief efforts. We can do as much as possible that's within our grasp to donate money, to give money. I'm not expecting you to give Tyler Perry type money. I'm not expecting you to donate a billion like Disney or all these other things, but we can do something. So if you know of any people who have relief efforts going on, make sure you contact them. Like I said, we're gonna find as many relief efforts as possible that we can attach links and things. Matter of fact, let me try to search Google something now, but it's bad, man. It's bad. And we got more hurricanes coming. This is the beginning of hurricane season. More are coming. So we have to be proactive in our efforts to stay safe and to get away from these storms. And I will encourage a lot of people, like you said, stop trying to ride these storms. Like, these storms are different. These storms are different. If you can get out, get out. If you know what's coming right at you, get out. Don't be trying to ride out these Category 5 storms that's busting you on your face like this. Like, my area last year got hit with a Cat 5. It wasn't nice. There's parts of Gaston County that are still messed up now. Think about Panama, what happened in the Panama City area. Still messed up now. People are still displaced. Don't be trying to be tough, man. I understand you've done this before, but this ain't the same type of storms. The earth is fighting back. The environment is doing what it needs to do to get rid of the virus, what it considers the viruses. So, I don't know, man. What have you learned so far, or have you come across any information about relief efforts?
You know, the standards are always available. Red Cross and all of these other places, they're always available. But, you know, when you said that we would have the links available up on the website, they'll be up. You know, but, you know, if people really want to donate, you can Google as well.
We'll have links
up to make it easier for people to find. But I was really thinking about, you know, why don't we as a show try to start, because we're always talking about putting links up so that they could donate to other people. You know, put a link up, y'all can send us the money, and we'll send it to the other people.
We can do that. We can definitely do that. We'll create something. We don't know exactly what it's going to be, but we'll create something, have it on the Freedom Train website. We'll have it on the front page of the website where people can donate money. And then what we'll do, we'll make sure we get this to actual organizations that are in the Bahamas who fight for the people in the Bahamas on a regular basis. So those will be the ones that we will get our information to. I mean, we'll get the resources to. Well, so, but I'm looking at, in the meantime, I'm looking at something called SamaritanPurse.org. And some of these I haven't had a chance to really research, so I can't tell you the validity of them and all that. But SamaritanPurse.org is one that I'm looking at. Of course, you know, like you said, the Red Cross, UNICEF. We have Bahamas Hurricane Relief. What's this team? RubiconUSA.org is another site that you can go look at. What else? What else am I seeing? The Guardian. TheGuardian.com has something like that. DirectRelief.org has information. You can go to WashingtonPost.com. CharityNavigator.org, GlobalGiving.org. So those are a couple of WorldVision.org, AllHandsAndHearts.org. Those are some HelpMeDonate.org. And we'll put a couple of these links in the, as well as create our own for Hurricane Dorian relief. So we'll just make sure on our front page from now on we have some kind of something that people can donate to for different relief efforts. So I know I just never wanted to get into that because I never really had the people on the ground level, but I think we probably just need to start doing that so we can ensure people that when they donate their money, they can go and actually be used to help what's going on. But it's, you know, we got to be empathetic. We got to be empathetic about what's going on in our world and everything, and just make sure that we're not the people that just like fuck it ain't happening to me. Like, we have to be empathetic, because if things go bad in your area, you'll want people to help you too. So let's not wait till things get better. Let's be on point. Let's be human beings. Let's just, my heart goes out to the people in the Bahamas, man. It's just not what you want. Like, everything you've known is gone away. A lot of some of the people you know are gone, and you have to start over. Talk about negative effects on your mental health.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah, man. But those are topics that we did want to get into today for this week's episode of the Freedom Train Podcast series. Let's get our mind right, man. Let's get our mind right. Let's stop acting like a lot of what goes on in our community ain't real. And let's do a better job of being better black people, better people, period, on this planet, and making things better for ourselves and our community members. Like I said, we have those donation links up, ready to go. Well, all you got to go to the post. Go to www.freedomtrainradio.com. Go to the actual post, and you'll see them. And it shall also be in the show notes on Stitcher, Radio Republic, Google Play, iTunes, and all that. It should also be on there.
Yeah,
so you'll be able to
get your podcast. We have the same show notes up everywhere.
There you go. And if you can't read it, I can't help you. There you gotta go back to your elementary school teachers. So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we need to slide in. Jay-Z needs to shut the hell up. But I talk about that on the Fix Sports Podcast. He needs to shut the fuck up. Other than that, though, man, what's your parting shot, though?
Man, power to the people.
Power to the Mickey Ficky people. Hey, man, y'all know how we do it. I'm Joseph Ward. He is Patrick Irvin. And this is the Freedom Train Podcast series right here on the Freedom Train Network. Once again, our website is www.freedomtrainradio.com, where we do our best to use our platform to uplift and empower our people. Radio design or black media design to free our minds. Amen. Two fingers in the air like a player, because y'all know we just don't care. And that means that we Mickey Pick it up out of here. Peace.